Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. We bring on our good friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, who is joining us almost on a weekly basis now. Joe Rexroad comes on the show, and now his good friend Charles, he can hear at all times. Charles, what's going on, brother?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing this morning?
Doing great. How are you?
Good.
So, Charles, we've all of us. So we've talked about Tom Brady heading to the Bucs potentially for the last couple weeks here on the show when we've had you on. Now that we know that that's where it's going to be, what was your initial reaction when it was made, I guess somewhat officially, he hasn't officially signed yet, but it seemed like Tom Brady was going to head for the Tampa Bay Bucs and it was going to become a real thing?
Yeah, I think what was interesting was right up until he called Robert Kraft to tell him, you know, that he had made this decision, there was a feeling in the building that I don't know how seriously the Patriots really took him actually leaving. And I say that because I had a chance to speak to somebody in the building right as we were kind of coming up against it where the tampering period was going to open. And he was kind of like, he couldn't believe it. He was like, I can't believe we're here. Like, I don't understand why, you know, there's not this dialogue someone hasn't started the dialogue. And, I think when Tom Brady called Robert Kraft to say, you know, I've made a decision, and they met, and it wasn't a, like, here's your opportunity to kind of change this meeting. It was a, hey, I'm doing this, and, you know, I just have, out of respect for you, I want you to understand my decision, and, you know, let's leave on good terms and all that. I'm interested to see now how the narrative plays outside of New England, because there's a steel curtain there, and not a ton of stuff comes out, but it seems like when it comes out, it really comes out. And I think that, I'll be completely honest with you, I think the Patriots were shocked by this. I think part of the reason why everyone's going, well, what's the plan right now? What are they doing? And nothing's happening is because they didn't have a plan. There was no plan. There was no plan to trade for Andy Dalton. I actually think Andy Dalton, if that deal was going to go down, at least up until yesterday, the odds were he was going to end up in Chicago. And I think what changed that was the Nick Foles deal. So I don't think right now, I think the Patriots right now are sort of failing without a map. I don't think they were expecting Tom Brady to leave. I think when it happened, it surprised them a little bit. And now they're trying to sort of figure out what exactly do we want to do at the quarterback spot. So, interesting to say the least. And with the Buccaneers, you know, good for having the guts, because I think the way that they pushed it was the way they had to push it, which was, hey, from the owner to the janitor, we're completely on board with this. We want to do everything we can to make this work. And, you know, if we've got to add other players around you, we're willing to do that. You know, let's get this done. And, you know, Arians, I would say if there are a few people who can really deliver a sales pitch in the NFL, Bruce Arians is probably in the top two or three guys. Like, he could not be more different than Bill Belichick that way.
Well, speaking of adding players, Charles, you were the one who brought up this Antonio Brown thing, which I'm seeing all over the place now. And right. I must give you credit for your Instagram stalking, by the way, for being tapped into that. But how viable is that? Could that possibly happen?
Look, the thing is, there's like a million things that have to happen before the Buccaneers could even consider it. So I spoke to somebody at the league yesterday and I said, okay, where are we at? You know, are we still in the same holding pattern with Antonio Brown? He said, yeah, you know, nothing's changed and there's no timeline. And, you know, I think part of this has shifted into kind of a mental health aspect for the league. And so, you know, I think there may have to be, you know, some sort of mental health hurdles for Antonio. It's not just a meeting with Roger and then, you know, meeting with some lawyers or whatever. You know, I think that his mental health is a concern now, given what sort of transpired over the last, you know, 12 months on his social media accounts outside of football. So that's complicated for him to even be considered. The league has to be able to tell a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, yeah, you know, if you sign him, we're not going to place him on the commissioner's exempt list. We're going to wrap this and everybody can move forward. And then when you get onto the football field aspect of it, you know, Mike Evans is in the middle of this deal. You know, I think you can sell it to there's a lot of sort of dialogue that's got to go on with guys on the roster. So, you know, Chris Godwin, hey, you're going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. Pretty important year for you. We're going to bring in a guy that's going to eat in pure catches. You know, we're going to bring in a guy who's potentially going to eat into your catches, Mike Evans. Great fit schematically from the football standpoint, but, you know, you guys have to be on board with this because you want to win a Super Bowl. That's what this is about. We've brought in Tom. We've got a 1 to 2 year window here. Let's maximize it as much as possible and, you know, and sell other players on it. So it's not as simple as Tom Brady just saying, hey, you know, this is a guy that I respect a lot. He really practiced his butt off. You know, he gave 100% when he was, you know, on the field in practice and the one game I played with him. Let's sign him, and they do it. It's not that simple. And really, I even think the Glazer family would have to kind of lean on Roger Goodell a little bit, which is not one of the things Antonio Brown has not had, an owner leaning on the commissioner to, hey, let's figure out let's put the plan in place to get this done.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports on the line with us. And Charles, Joe and I have been talking all week long about this crazy trade that sent DeAndre Hopkins from the Houston Texans to the Arizona Cardinals. We've even called it maybe one of the worst lopsided trades in NFL history that we can remember. What did you make of the trade by the Texans to send DeAndre Hopkins to the Cardinals and really all the drama that's followed Bill O'Brien with that?
Well, O'Brien, I mean, there's no question. There's always been this sort of feeling inside the Texans franchise, including people that are there, people who have left, that what he has always been reaching for, going back to when Rick Smith was the general manager, you know, Bill O'Brien talks to Bill Belichick. He talks to Sean Payton. These are two guys that have an immense amount of power in their organization, but especially Belichick. And I think in O'Brien's mind, it is the power of your organization has to flow from your coach. I mean, and particularly as it pertains to any football operations and even, you know, the financial side of it, the coach should be the person, you know, who's ultimately at the controls. And I've heard for years, and I even wrote about it in the midst of some of their success with Rick Smith, that the rift existed because Bill O'Brien wanted more power in the organization. They did not react well to that. Well, what's happened since? He's done nothing but, you know, the split with Rick Smith was absolutely, it was a winning situation for Bill O'Brien. You know, Brian Gain coming in and then being shuffled out after only 1 year was a winning situation for Bill O'Brien. Them not adding a general manager, which people were saying, look, they're not going to hire a GM. He's going to be the GM. This whole thing has been trending toward this. This is exactly what he wants. That trade is an extension of this. He can do whatever he wants, just like the Laremy Tunsil trade, just like the Jadeveon Clowney situation. He can send guys out the door no matter what the talent level is. He can fire sale them off if he feels like he wants to do that. And the owner's not stepping in to stop any of this. So I think, to me, the first thing I thought when I saw that is I'm like, if I'm Deshaun Watson, I'm questioning whether I'm signing a long-term deal with this organization. Like, you're going to offer me a ton of money, but I'm sitting here and Clowney's out the door for really an undervalued package. And they didn't shop him when they should have. DeAndre Hopkins is out the door for really an under you know, valued package. You get another old running back. Great. Congratulations. You know, and then you're going to pay Laremy Tunsil. He's going to be the highest paid left tackle in the league, which, by the way, you acquired him without having the extension in place. That's going to cost you. A lot of bad general managing going on by Bill O'Brien, frankly. And it's hard to really and the DeAndre Hopkins stuff that came out, sort of Michael Irvin opening his mouth and talking about maybe some of the other aspects of Bill O'Brien's relationship with DeAndre Hopkins. I'm telling you right now, that's not the only guy. Okay. Like, it's not, there are other guys that, and there are other weird stories that I have heard out of that organization. So it's just not great guys dealing with Bill O'Brien in that locker room all the time. And it's like that New England Bill Belichick. The difference is what? Hey, you go to the Super Bowl every other year for the last 20 years, basically. And so you deal with it.
Well, I mean, you live in Houston, Charles. Who is the least popular sports figure in Houston right now?
Oh, it's not even a question. I mean, it's been a running thing for a couple years now. I think the way the Clowney trade went down and the Tunsil trade went down fans lost their minds and they're like, this is ridiculous. But Hopkins, the difference with Hopkins was Clowney wanted more money. There was some public aspects to sort of the feuding that was going on with Clowney's camp. Tunsil, I think the negative reaction to the Tunsil deal was just that they had screwed up the offensive line for so long that fans are like, geez, this is so messed up that you have to go get Laremy Tunsil and give up so much to get him. And this is the end result of your inability to fix the line for years. So that's another, negative thing in his camp. But then Hopkins, I would say other than J.J. Watt, and, I would put Hopkins and Deshaun Watson right on the same level. People here love Nuke Hopkins. I mean, it's just and he gives them no reason to dislike him. He goes out, he performs. He's Deshaun Watson's number one guy. I think 30% of Deshaun's attempts were going to Nuke Hopkins. Not a problem off the field. And so when this happens, no one could believe it. Like, it was funny because I had people tell me when it first went down, they thought it was like a fake Adam Schefter account. They're like, oh, this is somebody got burned here. And, so to see it go down hurts, even when you hear the money aspect of it, and he wants $20 million a season. Absolutely. He sees all these other wide receivers paid and says, I'm a top five wide receiver. It's time for me to get, Amari Cooper or Nuke Hopkins. I mean, let's be real here. Nuke Hopkins, 100%. Yes. And Amari Cooper just signed a 5-year, $100 million deal. And so there's that aspect of it. But when all this other stuff comes out, it doesn't help the situation. And then the Stephon Diggs trade on top of it just makes it look like, you'd rather have a first-round pick than a second-round pick in David Johnson. The Arizona Cardinals could not get rid of David Johnson fast enough. They wanted to do it last year and couldn't do it.
Yeah, David Johnson and his deal. So thank you, Bill.
And his deal.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, here in Nashville, Charles, we're wondering, you mentioned Clowney. We're wondering about, the market for Jadeveon Clowney because, of course, Titans traded Jarrell Casey for a 7th-round pick yesterday to the Broncos. Clear salary dump. They could get into that. Vrabel coached him in Houston.
Right.
What do you think about that? What is the reasonable market for him, and how many suitors does he have right now?
Well, so Clowney coming into this free agency was aiming for, he wanted to be the highest paid defensive player. That he wants to be in that territory. He wants to be right there. And, so I think he was looking at a deal and, $22, $23 million a year. That was not at all what I had heard. So when I went around the combine and I tried to shape up his market, and then I'll be real with you, this year the combine numbers were a little wonky. Like, they were a little weird. And it was because I think a couple of things were happening. Free agency was pushed so far off that NFL teams weren't giving accurate numbers to agents because they were afraid that things were going to get shopped. Like, hey, if I give you a number here, you're going to run it around. That's how you end up with Jack Conklin with $18 million with the Jets, which was never real. I heard Jack Conklin, $17 million with the Washington Redskins. That was never real. So I think some fake numbers were getting out. Now, with Clowney, I think I was getting an accurate read. And what I heard was, probably 20, 21, like right in that sort of DeMarcus Lawrence range, what he got from the Cowboys, which is going to come in at about $20 million a year. Okay, well, that was short for Clowney. He wanted to maximize beyond that. And you're going to sit there and go, well, what's the difference between 20 and 23? In his mind, I think it was pretty big. And that was part of why he engineered this situation with Seattle, was to hit free agency. He wanted to max and be the highest paid defensive player. So his market has been soft. Interestingly enough, I think the Cowboys are a team that, might have thought of being interested in him, but I think the market is just too whacked out. And, you look at Philadelphia, I think that's a team that maybe kind of would have thought, they wanted to be interested in, but not at 23. No one's coming in anywhere near that number. So he's going to have to revise his thought process a little bit. And the reason why he's not worth that money is just because at the end of the day, your sack totals, you can't have uneven years. You need to be a consistent sack total guy. The Cowboys didn't even want to pay DeMarcus Lawrence $20 million a year because they're like, we want you at 15 every year. We want you to be that guy to make $20 million. And he wasn't even there. So Clowney's a great player against the run. A good pass rusher who definitely is a pressure player, applies pressure, but he's never reached that ceiling that people had for him. I would say he's like a 90 percenter. He's a guy who got 90% of the way. The problem is that extra 10% is what takes you to the very top of the heap.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Charles, thanks so much for joining us as always, man. We appreciate it.
Absolutely, fellas. Stay safe, all right?
You too.
You too, bud.
When we come back, we'll react to some of what Charles had to say there, including what is the market for Jadeveon Clowney? Who could be interested in his services outside of the Tennessee Titans? That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Charles Robinson of Yahoo Sports joined us in the last segment and had some interesting comments about not only the Jadeveon Clowney situation, but also DeAndre Hopkins as well in Houston. Joe, it just kind of seems like he said, you know, the Hopkins story that Michael Irvin has come out there with, that's not really the only thing that's come out there that he's heard regarding Bill O'Brien in terms of his relationships with players in Houston. The more that we talk about this and the more that we get thoughts from other people on this matter, it just seems like Bill O'Brien is such a total disaster in Houston in terms of the way he's going about approaching the power struggle that's going on there.
Well, yeah. Wow, that was loud in my headphones. Sorry. He's
got really excited about that.
Yeah, he is. He's clearly a bad GM. I mean, I think that's
clearly
been demonstrated. I still, you know, it's. We've got one conversation, and you, as you said, Charles said, there's other stories. Everyone's not going to get along with everyone. You know, I want to hold off on, you know, assuming that he's just a total disaster behind closed doors and everybody hates his guts. You know, I don't think you can coach a team as successfully as he has if that's the case, if you can't have some relationships and, you know, handle people to a certain extent. But it's looking worse and worse for him. And Charles kind of detailed some of the other, you know, the way that they handled the Clowney transaction,
yeah,
the Tunsil situation. Again, it's like this is not a situation where one person should do both of those jobs. And I understand that it's worked for Belichick, but yes, Super Bowls all the time. Tom Brady is your quarterback.
A little bit different.
Yeah, a little bit.
As far as Clowney is concerned, obviously Titans fans are going to be paying attention to that hot and heavy over the next day, 2 days, week, couple weeks, however long this lasts, with the dance between NFL teams and Jadeveon Clowney. I think Titans fans are going to connect the dots. Now that they've traded Jarrell Casey and sent him to Denver, Clowney's going to be a name that continues to crop up and creep up here in the conversation among Titans fans. The $20 million into the, you know, the $21, $22 million range, trying to be the highest paid player on the defensive side of the ball in the NFL, I just don't think he's worth that. I really don't. I think he's a good player. I think he's a great defender against the run. The pass rush, to me, is just not consistent enough, I think, to justify paying that much money for Clowney.
Yeah, and of course there's limitations to the sack number. I mean, the Titans just paid $9.5 million for a guy who had 8 sacks last year,
yeah,
and everyone's going gaga over a guy who had 3. Of course, that's not all it is. There's a lot more to it. But as Charles Robinson kind of pointed out, Clowney has never been, you know, the guy people hoped he was going to be coming out of South Carolina. He's been really good. He is really good. He would be, I have no doubt, he would be a significant addition to this Titans defense if they were to land him. I mean, he can do a lot of different things, and he would be disruptive. They would instantly be better against the run, and he would impact the pass rush. But $22-23 million, how could he think that he,
yeah,
would have that kind of market? And now, who else is out there, other than we presume the Titans, who are, you know, trying to chase him? I mean, the Giants was a team that you heard about. The Colts, that was a team you heard about. They got Buckner.
That's not going to happen now. Yeah.
So I mean, they're basically both out of there. interesting that Charles would talk about the Cowboys. As soon as he said that, I'm like, do they not have a salary? Do they have a special salary cap?
Is there something we don't know about with the Cowboys?
So, like, so then the question is, if you're Clowney and this market is as soft as it appears, where does the number go? And does that make it? I mean, it seems, you know, most likely he probably goes back to the Seahawks. But they didn't end, you know, they didn't tag him or anything. I mean, you know, he's out there. How interested would he be in coming here and playing for Mike Vrabel again?
Well, let's say the number ends up somewhere, obviously not $20 million, but somewhere in that 16, 17 range. Like, if that's the case and the Titans are willing to go there, what should expectations for Jadeveon Clowney be at that point if he does end up signing with the Titans? Because to me, we've talked about the pass rush all offseason long. You got to be a huge difference maker in that area if you're signing at that number to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, if you're making that kind of money, to me, you better be a double-digit sack guy. But, you know, if he were to come in and impact the rush defense and impact the quarterback and help like a Harold Landry have big numbers, I mean, there's other ways you could quantify his impact. But still, I mean, that kind of money, that's a guy who actually goes and tackles the quarterback to me. I still think that number's big. And again, So where does it end up with him? And how much does he like Seattle too? I mean, that's another question. And I would assume this is a question for him. You know, where does he feel better about having a chance to contend? You know, Seattle's in the Niners division. I mean, the Cardinals are getting way better.
Yeah, they are.
No, the Seahawks are still – it's a good team. But does he feel better about being in the AFC? And, you know, does he want to, you know, go play the Texans twice a year? I don't know. There's a lot of different things that could come into play here. But if you're spending that kind of money on him, you are spending on a great player. That's the expectation.
Yeah. Joe, real quickly, Charles also brought up the possibility of Antonio Brown joining forces with Tom Brady in Tampa Bay. Sounds like there's a ton that's going to have to happen from a league perspective before that even becomes a possibility. But if you're Tampa, or if you're really any team, do you even consider doing this? I mean, I understand the talent part of it, but you're talking about a guy who you're bringing in Brady, you know, from a locker room perspective, he is going to be such an influential figure in that room. Maybe he can keep Antonio Brown under wraps to a certain degree, but if you're the Bucks, and let's just say for the sake of argument, all of Antonio Brown's issues that he's dealing with to even be able to come back and play, they get taken care of. Do you consider even doing that if you're the Bucks? Because I would stay away from it.
Well, you consider it, but man, you would have to do a lot of vetting, and you'd have to have a lot of assurances and. I mean, it's very risky. I mean, the thing is, you could be talking about, I mean, it kind of would remind me of almost like Cleveland, but where, you know, Cleveland last year just was clearly dysfunctional.
Yeah.
And you bring in Antonio Brown, already it's going to be, I know Tom Brady is a great player and has all this respect, but it's still going to be even, that's a jolt to the guys in that locker room now for him to come in, you know, and that's not going to be just easy, right? So then you're talking about Antonio Brown and all his issues. And if things didn't start off well, you could see how that could get ugly. But, man, the flip side of that is Mike Evans and Antonio Brown.
Chris Godwin. I mean.
Yeah, I mean, it would be an incredible collection of talent. It's something fun to think about anyway.
When we come back, Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, will join us. We'll get his thoughts on maybe some potential playoff formats in the NHL. Also, his reaction to losing his quarterback in New England, Tom Brady. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. And it's that time of the week. We bring in our good friend Hal Gill, who is brought to you each and every week at this time by Puckett's. Skillsy, what's going on, brother?
Nothing. Trying to break down losing Tom Brady as a Patriots fan, it's tough. And to see him go somewhere else is even harder. So, you know, a little bit of mourning, but I'm doing okay.
Were you an emotional person yesterday when it came out that, Tom Brady was going to be leaving?
Yeah, you know what? I always thought it was going to kind of come around, but, you know, it wasn't meant to be. And it was, I had a lot of years rooting for him. So now it's going to be hard to flip it off and hate him, you know? I mean, he's a big part of the Patriots. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah, I think I did notice that. What are the Patriots going to do at quarterback now? Like, how would you like to be the guy that follows in the footsteps of Tom Brady in New England?
Well, you know what? I'm expecting Belichick to totally revamp everything and pull a rabbit out of a hat. So I don't think it's going to be that important. I think there's going to be something different. It's going to be a different play, and I don't know what it is yet, but I have a lot of belief in Bill Belichick, so we'll see what happens.
So you're not a Stidham believer yet, is what you're telling us.
No, I don't know if I can buy into that yet.
So, Hal, how's your social distancing game going these days?
It's good. My kids might drive me crazy, but I think if you ask my kids, I might drive them crazy. So we're handling it. We're going through this. We have a to-do list. Next week we have to start school, so that's going to be a whole different thing. You know, they have their computers and they're ready to go online and do school. So that's going to be a new trick. But so far, so good. We're fighting this. We're getting through it.
So, Hal, it's hard to believe it's really only been a week since the NHL made the decision to pause their season. And when they made that decision, you know, I was kind of like everybody else, where it was like, you know, maybe the first part of April, maybe mid-April, late April at the latest, we'll be back and we'll be playing hockey again. And, you know, whether they finish out the regular season or they go straight into the playoffs, we'll at least have hockey played again. Now, like everything that's happened in the course of the last week, there's just a lot of uncertainty. And I think, you know, I don't know for sure that this is going to happen, but I think not coming back and playing this season is a real possibility. What have you made of kind of everything that's transpired in our nation over the course of the last week?
Well, not to get too deep on you, because I'm not a philosopher, but I really feel like the whole world has always been like, I want it, and I want it now. And right now we're kind of forced into a holding pattern where we don't know what we're going to get, and we don't know when we're going to get it, and it's tough for us to handle. I want to say, yeah, April is going to come around, and we're going to have hockey, but I don't know that, and I can hope for that, but it's really, it's been, for me, it's been humbling just because the uncertainty. You don't, you know, you kind of have to take a step back and hit the reset button and say, all right, well, we're going to ride this out. And when it's over, it's over. It's not easy to handle. My big thing is that, you know, maybe there won't be crowds, but if the NHL can get some games in without crowds and kind of ramp up as crowds can join, Can we add more people? I think if there's a slow burn back into hockey, it might be good, but I don't know. I hope it's soon, because I do miss it, and you know, it's something that I think we all need to have sports in our lives. It's something we've taken for granted for a long time, so we need to get it back soon. But we got to ride this out until then.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, a week ago, Hal, covering a couple, Marquise and I are at Bridgestone watching a couple not very good SEC basketball games, and I missed them. I missed them badly. I barely watched them. But let's say if it does happen in some form and it can come back, what do you think would be the most reasonable way to, and again, without knowing the exact timeline, but let's say it's pretty compressed, the most reasonable way to determine the playoffs and then play them?
Yeah, well, first of all, don't forget, these guys are all sitting at home doing nothing. You can't go to a rink and train. I'm sure guys are working out and doing the best they can in their house, but they need to train. So for a week off, you'd need at least 3 days of a training camp. For every other week that you add onto it, I would add another day. So assuming it's a month that you're off, that would be 3, 4, 5, 6 days of training camp. So call it a week. So whenever it starts, you need a week of training camp, and then, you know, I would guess they'd jump right into the playoffs and try to say, hey, these are the seeds that we have, and these are how the playoffs would play out based on percentage. But I just can't see them doing a play-in, you know, into the playoffs. It's going to have to be shortened somehow, but there's a lot of questions that, you know, the NHL has got to try to do the best for the game, and the players and the Players Association have to sit down with them and make sure that the players are protected. The last thing you want is to jump into playoffs after you haven't had much time to get into it. So I don't know. It's going to be tough to see how this plays out, but I would suggest a playoff format that's already been determined. I just think it would be too hard to play, you know, one or two, three, four games that lead up to a playoff. I just think it would be unfair to the league to do that. So but we'll see.
Preds radio analyst Hal Gill brought to you by Puckett's each and every week at this time. And Hal, you know, there's been an idea thrown out there about maybe stretching the playoffs as late as August, maybe even September, doing free agency in October and starting next season in November. Obviously, none of us have like a perfect answer to this, but what do you think the balance needs to be from a league standpoint of trying to do the best you can to finish this season, but also not affecting next season too much? And do you think stretching the playoffs into September maybe affects next season too much?
Yeah, well, I will tell you, after being signing with different teams and being traded, if you go in too far, you really, you know, if you start the season next season, and you, I think you said October would be a free agency period.
Yep.
Well, now you have to figure out where your kids are going to go to school. There's a lot that goes into, you know, the off season for a player. It would be really difficult to upset the next season. So I think if it were to go into August, I think it would probably be better off just cutting bait and calling the season off and starting fresh next year. But, you know, if you're looking into extending free agency into mid-July, then it's a different story. So I don't know. It's a tough one. I don't have all the answers. Every time I think this is a good idea, that then I look at it and go, well, that's crazy. You can't do that because of this. So there's a lot of things that have to be factored in, but I wouldn't upset the next season too much to try to salvage this season. If you can squeeze in a playoff format, I think you should do that, but I wouldn't go too much past into July. I think that'll be too much. Getting into August would be a lot, and I think players would really not like to have their summer cut that short, and to extend the next year and ruin the whole year next year would be too much, for my opinion.
Howie had Chris Mason on earlier this week, and he said a new hobby he's picked up is basically being like a 14-year-old boy and playing video games until 3 o'clock in the morning. Are there any new hobbies that you have picked up during this time?
No. Yeah. Well, you know, my daughters have to do like TikToks and stuff. And, you know, I basically all the kids, stuff my kids do, I'm just basically following them around. I'm not a huge hobby guy. I haven't gotten into puzzles yet, but I will. That's something that's coming. I'm a puzzle guy, so that would probably be it. But video games, I'm not a vidiot. I'm certainly not. So I try to play with my son, but I'm not really into it.
Hal Gill, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm
sure you will. You'll find something. Hal Gill, ladies and gentlemen, has been our guest here on Morning Drive, brought to you each week by Puckett's. Skillsy, hang in there, man. Thanks so much for taking time to come on with us this morning.
All right. Stay safe, guys. Wash your hands.
You too. We appreciate you. He doesn't really strike me as the video game type. I think, did he just call it vidiots? Is that what he said there?
Oh, I like that. If so, I'm going to adopt that. I'm with him too. I don't even know what are they, PS4? Is that what it is?
Yeah.
I don't even know, man. I don't like these video games. I tell them, I mean, video games were perfected like with my Atari 2600.
Were they?
Here comes Joe back in my day.
All right.
In my day with the Atari.
Well, okay, look.
There were dots on the screen, and you had to follow the dots around.
It was simple. It was hand-eye coordination.
Back in the day was Miss and Mr. Pac-Man.
Well, I'll tell you, though. That's fine. You guys can make fun of me, but Super Tecmo Bowl, I defy anyone to argue with me that that's not the greatest game ever.
It's a great game.
Sega Hockey was right there for me. But Super Tecmo Bowl with all the teams, you can change your playbook. Yeah, man. Randall Cunningham.
Joe Rexrow could not wait to get his quarters to go down to the local arcade to play his video games.
Oh, I loved it. See, that's when it was good. Now this
what game
that's
were you
way
the best
too complicated.
At?
Oh, Super Tecmo Bowl. That was
Tecmo
unbelievable.
Bowl?
Yeah. No, I was dorm champ. But yeah, exactly. But like these kids now, like, what they're playing, they have all these different buttons and everything. It's all these kill games. I can't stand it.
Joe.
I can't stand it, man. What do you play? What kind
I don't
of,
think he's
what kind
ever
of violent, bloody games?
Right
I don't
now.
Play violent and bloody games, but GTA. That's probably the
I
only.
Do.
That's the closest thing to violent I get.
GTA
I
play is what?
Grand Theft Auto.
Oh,
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, yeah.
I play NBA 2K.
Yeah, that's fine.
NBA 2K or Madden. And used to be NCAA football. Used to be religiously.
And then
used to play
the
that
joy
game.
Was robbed from us.
And
when
then
the
joy was robbed
from
us, thanks to Ed O'Brien.
Ed O'Bannon. Yeah.
O'Bannon. Excuse me.
We've had a lot of O'Brien talk today.
We did.
Yeah, we're gonna blame every O'Brien.
Every O'Brien is getting blamed.
I needed to get my O'Brien fixed today, but yeah, he ruined it for me for NCAA. So, thank you.
When we come back, we'll wrap up the show, get back into the Jarrell Casey trade. Also, do we trust that Jeffrey Simmons can handle a larger role now that Jarrell Casey is gone? That's coming up next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. Joe Ron texts in and says, if you had Bo Jackson on Tecmo Bowl, you had the best running back on the game and the fastest. Outran everybody.
Yeah, now that's Tecmo Bowl. That's the original.
That's the original.
So the original Tecmo Super. Bowl, I think you had 8 teams. And yes, if you had the Raiders, you had Bo Jackson and Marcus Allen.
What a
ridiculous
combo!
Ridiculous, but that.
But
game,
you can't use them though. That's not fair.
Well, see that game, the original Tecmo Bowl, you only had 4 plays for each team. You only had 8 teams, and the plays were picked for you. So this was your playbook. You know, here's your 2 pass plays. Here's your 2 running plays. You know, the Super Tecmo Bowl, you get all the teams, not all the players. Like Jim Kelly, Randall Cunningham, Bernie Kosar, they did not sign on, so you had to go QB Browns,
yeah.
QB Eagles. But you had all these playbooks. You could change your playbooks. You play a whole season. Much better game, but no Bo Jackson. Because Bo Jackson had hurt his hip, and it was gone by the time that game hit the market. So there you go. There's your little Tecmo history lesson. But speaking of history lessons, we've been watching on MLB Network, May 17th, 1979, Phillies-Cubs game, man. Incredible. 23-22 final. You got Pete Rose at first base, Mike Schmidt at third for the Phillies, Gary Maddux in center field, Bill Buckner at first for the Cubs. Dave Kingman had 3 homers that day. Bill Buckner, 4-for-7, 7 ribbies that day.
You imagine scoring 22 runs in a baseball game and losing?
Only the Cubs.
Oh, yeah.
Only at Wrigley. But they were down, like, so it was 7, it was 15, it was 7-0 in the first, and it was 15-6 in the third. Oh, man.
Ends not a up, great day for the starting pitchers.
But I like that MLB Network. This is what we need. We need more of this stuff. Give us games like this to watch on MLB Network.
Yeah, like I think the NHL has come out and made like their content from this year free. So like you can go back and watch games from this year. So if you're a Preds fan and you'd like to watch like the entire Predator season over again, sure.
Yep.
You can do that.
They got them. Yeah.
The NBA is giving you free games.
Yeah.
On NBA TV.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes. NBA.com, too. Up until May, NBA League Pass is all free.
Well, and also, is it the All-22 the NFL's making all free for everybody, too? Did I see that correctly?
I didn't see that, but I hope so. That'd be awesome.
I believe so. I'll check on that. I think that's right. Yeah, make everything free.
Yeah, why not? Joe, speaking of the NFL, we've been talking all morning long about Jarrell Casey being traded to the Denver Broncos. And now that's going to mean a bigger role, regardless of which decision the Titans make or don't make in free agency or in the draft. Jeffrey Simmons is going to have a bigger role next year with this team, more responsibility. I think more expectations also would be fair to put in that category as well. Do we feel like we can trust Jeffrey Simmons to fill that void without Jarrell Casey by his side? What does that mean in terms of production? I'm not sure. He showed some moments last year where he was totally dominant. I mean, was really good at moving the line of scrimmage and having a big impact that way. I think having a healthy offseason, being able to train fully, which he was not able to do last year coming off the ACL injury, I think that could be really, really beneficial for Jeffrey Simmons, and the Titans are going to need that without Jarrell Casey in the fold.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of excitement about Jeffrey Simmons, and there should be a lot of excitement. He's a really talented guy who I think could be a dominant defensive lineman in this league for a lot of years. It's also a big change for him to not have a guy I believe was a mentor for him, also a guy who would make things easier on him this year. I mean, Jarrell Casey has diminished some. I think that's fair to say. I don't think there's any question about that, but I don't think a lot. And I think this year I was really interested to see how a fully healthy Simmons with a full off season with Casey would look. Now we don't know. So now it's a lot more on Simmons. And, of course, we don't know what the final picture is going to look like. I think they've got to find more help for him. But certainly I think one aspect of this move is a vote of confidence in what Jeffrey Simmons is about to become.
I think so, too. And, look, the pass rushing aspect of it is a little bit different. I mean, you're not talking about an edge rusher here. So in the run game, he's going to be huge. We saw it last year. I mean, that game against the Chargers, he was – basically almost single-handedly responsible for the goal line staying there in terms of how much pressure he was able to push back on that offensive line. So, you know, it's kind of similar with Jarrell Casey. Even though Jarrell Casey put up some great years with sack numbers as well, it's more than just your sack numbers with these guys. It's how much impact do you have on pushing back the line of scrimmage, allowing some other members like Vic Beasley, like Harold Landry, and whoever else the Titans go out and get to generate some of that pass rush. Jeffrey Simmons, I think his impact, it's not all going to be in the numbers that you notice him from. Just like in the same way Jarrell Casey's wasn't all in the numbers.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, that aspect is always underrated. And we've been talking a lot about Tom Brady every day. You know, Tom Brady, the number one way to bother Tom Brady was always to get pressure inside on him. And if you can be disruptive there, it makes it so much easier on everybody else and so much tougher on the offense. And a lot of times numbers don't come with that, but that is absolutely a premium to find guys who can be, you know, who can command double teams and still be disruptive when they get them. And that's what, you know, Jeffrey Simmons, I think, could be in this league. I just think that next year you've got to find something else here. I mean, like a guy like Clowney moving around and doing what he does, that could be really fun to watch in tandem with a Simmons. You know, the question is whether that's realistic and whether they can pay him and whether he wants to leave Seattle. But I think right now, if you look at the Tennessee Titans, to me, they are a weaker football team right now than they were a couple days ago. There's no way to argue otherwise.
I agree 1,000%. I'm going to put you on the spot quickly as we start to wrap up here. Is Jadeveon Clowney a member of the Tennessee Titans next year? I am going to say no. I think the price scares them off. I think that they're not going to come anywhere close to this $20 million number that he's reportedly thrown out there and that he's looking for. I'm going to say that Clowney ends up back in Seattle and the Titans don't have it.
I would guess that too. If I had to guess, I would say another sort of mid-level addition like Vic Beasley was, and then bring back Logan Ryan.
Yeah.
That's where I think that money goes. Logan Ryan coming back and another addition in the front seven to try to, you know, to get something more there, but without the big ticket item of Jadeveon Clowney.
The pass rushing attack by committee, baby. That's part of it. Look, Logan Ryan could be a part of that too. We've seen that.
He is a heck of a blitzer. As blitzing defensive backs go, Logan Ryan's elite.
There's no question about that. That's going to do it for us today here on Morning Drive. Joe, thank you for coming in. We appreciate it. You'll be back
Thanks
here tomorrow at 6 o'clock.
Indeed.
That's going to do it for us today on Morning Drive. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. Maybe some other free agency news happens with the Titans around the league. We'll get into that. Also look ahead to Tom Brady. Maybe he's officially signed with the Bucs by then. Who knows?
That'd be fun.
That'd be nice. I think he took a physical today in New York.
They can't say it even if he is, though.
I know. Darren Donick and Chase coming up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Everybody stay safe out there. Wash your hands. We'll talk to you tomorrow.